The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
She thought it would be a fun reunion with friends, but Mary Jo Kopechne's last night ended in dark water. Was it a simple accident, or was there a sinister cover-up at play? This week's episode is Chappaquiddick.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Hood.
I'm gonna kill you. I have a really weak heart, I think, because I like...
God, is this where you... Tell us all you're dying.
Oh, no, I have a very strong heart. I mean, like, a weak soul, because I just feel like I can see the good in people, and I've been struggling a lot with seeing the good in Ted Kennedy.
What do you think was good about him?
Well, first of all, I'm reading Give Us Our Ballot, which is a voter rights book.
Oh, nice.
And it's, like, the history of the Voting Rights Act and basically the systematic oppression of people of color over the last, 100 years.
Yeah.
And he was instrumental in getting younger people the right to vote. So there was a bill that he knew was going to pass, and he slipped in the under 21, so you be 18 to vote provision.
Oh.
And his argument was, if you can be sent to die in Vietnam, you should be able to vote.
I think that's a good argument.
And also, he did a lot of good, like, in the rest of his life. He was a real charitable guy, and apparently...
The Kennedys in general were very charitable.
Well, I mean, when you're rich,
you
should be.
I mean,
but
exactly.
Also, there was a lot of talk that he was just, like, a good friend and, like, a good listener and a super... They said he just had a big heart and he really believed in everything he did.
I think it's possible to be... have good qualities but still do really terrible things.
So my question is, does someone's actions fundamentally define who they are?
Ooh, that's a good question.
And can you change? Or, like,
I do think you can change.
Okay.
I do think you can change, but I think you have to really want to change and really make a lot of effort and work on yourself.
Or you kill someone and you're like, oh God, I gotta change, or I'm gonna go to hell.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people find God in prison.
That's true.
That type of thing.
That's true. But I just wonder that. And I've been trying to be, because it's the Christmas season about to be.
Yeah.
And not that I'm religious, but I do love Christmas.
Oh,
and
who doesn't?
I turned Christmas music on today. And
I almost turned it on yesterday.
Oh, I got a Spotify playlist I'll share.
Nice.
But there's the song from Scrooged, which at the end he gets, like, really choked up, and he's like, the feeling that we feel on Christmas where we take care of each other and we're kind and loving and thoughtful, we should be like that every day, and every mm-hmm. day can be like that if we want it to be. So I was like, maybe every day could be like that. And then I almost cried in the car when I was driving.
Oh man.
But it, you know, like, does this event define you?
That's a good question. I think that this event defined him not being able to be the president.
Definitely.
I mean, when you're a person in the public eye, a celebrity, a politician, whatever it may be, and some scandal happens, mm-hmm. in the public eye, it kind of does define you.
That's true.
But the public eye is also looking for drama and scandal because that's, everybody loves that.
It's true.
I doubt this defined him to his family.
They weren't allowed. Nobody talked about it ever after this.
Yeah, not just to like psychiatrists. Rosemary. Anything bad that happens to this family, they just brush it under the rug.
Seriously, they were like, "You're not allowed to talk to your psychiatrist about it, because, or your psychologist about it, because what if they leave and go tell someone?" It's like, well, that's the point of the psychologist.
Yeah. Also, that would be a huge breach of patient confidentiality.
But what if you're a psychologist and you have the Kennedy and you have the scoop? And who cares if you get sued?
I'm sure it happens all the time.
Yeah, so that was a big thing in this family is you did not bring it up. You didn't talk about it. And yeah, like you said with Rosemary, Ted was raised by her. He said she was the most loving person and they were best friends. And then when he was 8, she disappeared. Yeah. And if you listen to the last episode, Rosemary Kennedy was 23 when her dad sent her away mm-hmm. to get a lobotomy and then sent her to Wisconsin, never to be talked about or heard from again.
And we didn't bring it up on the last episode, but her sister Esther was very close to her mm-hmm. and because of her started a program in her own backyard for children with mental disabilities, aww. Which became the Special Olympics.
There you go.
She founded the entire Special Olympics program, and JFK donated tons of money and helped pass bills that would help people
with disabilities,
with mental health. And yeah, I mean, so
it's just this.
They all did good.
Yeah.
They also all did bad.
Yeah. It's like.
But who hasn't? Who doesn't cross all of those lines?
I think sure that too. I was also struggling with Lyndon Johnson because, again, in the Voting Rights Act, he passed the voter rights bill and he basically physically threatened George Wallace and was like, "I am going to give Black Americans the right to vote. I don't care what you say." And they said George Wallace was like 5'9 and Lyndon Johnson was like 6'8. He was like huge. And they said he stood up to him and said that. On the flip side, Lyndon Johnson sent a bunch of people to Vietnam to die. Yeah. So it's this struggle between, I guess that's anything political, is this between what you do that benefits others and then the personal slights and horribleness. I guess that's not even personal, sending people to Vietnam. I don't know. It's a lot of tough. I've been going through a lot of tough moral questions.
But I think they're all very valid and good. As much as we both despise Trump.
Yes.
He has probably done something good in his life.
I'll tell you right now what Donald Trump did that was good. He helped Macaulay Culkin find his way
in Home Alone 2. Yes.
The one good thing. That could be a whole other podcast of me ranting about everything in the last week. But no, yeah, so that's my question is, you know, or maybe is it like the measure of your harm? Also, I've been watching a lot of The Good Place and like, what do we owe to each other in this like societal contract mm-hmm. of like, you owe not only just like basic dignity and respect to your fellow man, but like help as much as you can.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. But
isn't that crazy though, that like you legally don't have to help people if they're in, you witness a crime or a crime taking place, like you're not legally obligated.
Only
which kind
in
of
states,
comes up to play in this one.
I was going to say, only in states with Good Samaritan laws like on Seinfeld.
Yes. Yeah.
Then you have to help.
Well, we should have a countrywide Good Samaritan law.
Yeah. Because that's the issue is then you can
sued. The first thing we all do is impeach our president.
Good
that's
God.
The first Good Samaritan law we'll that we...
We'll see what happens.
Act I mean, that we do. Yeah.
We're headed that way.
Yep, yep,
so,
yep.
All right. So, like, say, for instance, you get in a car accident and someone's in the car with you. Maybe try to help them, right? If you can.
Maybe. But if you don't, you know what? There's nothing that's legally... Well, kind of legally obligating you to, but we'll see that... If you're a Kennedy, that doesn't really matter.
There's a different set of rules. So I'm Heather.
I'm Christy.
And today we're talking about the Chappaquiddick incident. And that's the famous incident. Not even famous. Apparently people didn't really know about it until like the 90s. Yeah, it's infamous.
And what have you coined? You've given several very nice monikers to this month of our Kennedy month.
We're calling it Jovember F. Kennedy. So this is our
very
Kennedy
good.
November, Jovember F. Kennedy.
Yes, leading up to the 55th assassination of JFK at the end of the month.
That's right.
Okay, so let's get into it. Chappaquiddick. On the evening of July 18th, 1969, Ted Kennedy hosted a party at a cottage he had rented on Chappaquiddick Island, just outside of Martha's Vineyard.
I think I'll feel rich when I can go to Martha's Vineyard.
Right, or the Hamptons.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like as a white person, you have made it wealth-wise.
Did you say as a white person? Anybody can go there.
Because it's, we talked last week about how it's the rich white people place.
I guess
to
that's
go.
True. Yeah, it's pretty.
Of course, anybody can go there. Well, I've never been, but it's probably an unstated rule that.
It's Mayonnaise Island.
Yeah, yes. Like, yes, anyone's welcome, but do you dare?
A few years ago, there was a hedge fund that rented out a house on Airbnb, and they destroyed it because they could afford to basically
where,
pay for
in,
it.
On Martha's
and, like,
Vineyard?
I think it was in Martha's Vineyard, and there was all these pictures on Instagram, and they had, like, jello wrestling, and they were shooting, like, vodka out of, like, squirt guns, and it was shenanigans.
Like, straight out of Wolf of Wall Street?
Pretty
nice.
Much.
Well, this party was being thrown as a reunion for six women known as the Boiler Room Girls. They had all worked on Robert Kennedy's presidential campaign in 1968. They were given the nickname the Boiler Room Girls because of the windowless office they had shared. They were Rosemary Kehoe.
Kehoe, I would say.
Esther Newberg, sisters Nance and Mary Ellen Lyons, Susan Tannenbaum, and Mary Jo Kopechne. Mary Jo was well known in Democratic circles in Washington and was really making a name for herself. She had worked for a Florida senator before working on Kennedy's Senate staff. And while on Kennedy's staff, she helped write an anti-Vietnam speech for RFK and his address announcing his presidential candidacy.
And in the Boiler Room, they were down there counting delegates that were were pledging themselves to vote for him. So, I mean, these women, RFK was super progressive, and these women had a ton of responsibility and really helped run his campaign. And he was beloved. And, like, when she worked for that Florida senator, before she worked for RFK, she kept trying to go and get assignments with him. And finally, the senator said, you know what? Why don't you just hire her? Because you're the one whose picture she has on her desk.
Oh,
like,
wow.
She just thought he was just the cat. Not, and it that wasn't
was,
like,
she had made it if she could work for him.
It wasn't like in, like, a I love you and I want to be your girlfriend way. It was like a, you are going to save our country way.
Just total admiration.
Total, yeah.
Yes. Respect. They were all very smart women. Way more than what the press painted them as later.
Blonde secretary.
Yes. Mary Jo wasn't even supposed to be at the party at Chappaquiddick due to a work commitment. However, she got someone to cover for her at the last minute because she really wanted to see her friends. Haven't we talked about how it's always like
that? Like a thin
slice.
Like
you're not supposed to be at work. It's always your day. You hear about that, like, in when people have been, like, working at a 7-Eleven or something like that, and somebody comes in to hold them up and they're killed. It's like, they weren't even supposed to be working. They just filled in for someone.
Yeah.
And I've said before, if you are not supposed to be at work, do not go to work.
Don't
just
pick
stay
up a shift.
At home, because nothing good ever comes of it.
No joke. It's always like, well, if only they had just gone to bed, or if only they hadn't gone, or their mother told them to be careful.
The other night, I don't remember where, I may have been leaving your house, or maybe I was leaving DCH, but I got caught in a huge traffic jam because of a huge wreck on 70 or on 35, on 30, and it was bad. Like, once I finally got up there, there's a good chance somebody didn't walk away from that. But I was like, if I had left 5 minutes earlier,
that could have been you.
Would I have been involved in this?
It's true. Or would it not have happened? I mean, you don't know.
Yeah, or maybe it's the whole butterfly effect. Like, maybe it wouldn't have happened, or maybe it would have, and I would have been involved. So
it's so weird. But I will say, Mary Jo's mom, before she went to Martha's Vineyard, her mom said, oh, honey, just be careful of the water. Mm. And Mary Jo said, oh, mom, you know, I just like to sunbathe. I don't even swim.
God. Well, yeah, I mean, she kind of, that's true.
She should have been.
She didn't end up swimming.
Nope.
Well, also in attendance at the party were, of course, Senator Ted Kennedy, his cousin Joseph Garrigan, former Massachusetts U.S. Attorney Paul F. Markham, Kennedy advisor Charles Treader, Raymond LaRosa, and John B. Crimmins, Kennedy's part-time driver. With the exception of Crimmins, all the men were married and much older than the women.
Apparently, Ted told everybody to leave their wives home, and he invited more people. And when he told some of the guys that, they were like, yeah, we're not going to go.
Oh.
So,
or they're more like, yeah, we can't go.
Probably. Our wife said no.
We'd love to go, but no, the old thanks. Ball and chain isn't going to allow it.
Yeah, they did say that they loved to party, and, like, Mary Jo loved to party, but that her ex-boyfriend described her as straight as an arrow, the straightest arrow you'll ever see, because she went to his law school dance with him, and she had to go to a different city to do that. And when she got there, she refused to sleep in his apartment. She said, "You have to find me somewhere else to sleep. I'm not that kind of girl." Mm. And so she ended up staying with his landlady. You know, this idea of like, they're going to go to this wild party and get all drunk and sleep with Ted Kennedy. Like, she wasn't the type of person to do that.
Yeah.
But then I think kind of the, maybe the cover up or something kind of portrayed her as
Yes. So. She had traditional morals of that time.
Yeah, she was a good Catholic girl. For what was
expected of women.
She's a good old Catholic girl.
Well, here's where details start to become fuzzy and two different stories emerge. So, according to Senator Kennedy, at approximately 11:15 p.m., Mary Jo asked if he would drive her to the ferry so she could catch the last one for the night to Edgartown, where her hotel was located. The last ferry left at midnight, and none would run again until the morning, making it impossible to leave the island until then.
It's that old thing when you're trying to leave the party, you're like, oh, do I go with this person, or am I stuck here and sleep on a couch?
Yeah. Well, and you're also like, well, I know I've got a certain amount of time before mm-hmm. that decision's going to be made for me. That's why I won't go somewhere where I'm going to be trapped.
I hate being trapped anywhere.
Uh-uh.
At a party, anything like that.
No. Take your own car, or...
That's like... I'm sorry. This is a side story. I got, so like a funeral, right? You can't, like, you're in a funeral. You can't get up and leave the funeral, right?
You shouldn't.
Okay. So I was at a funeral very recently.
Okay.
And it was in a crematorium chapel.
Okay.
So like, it's small and very echoey. And like, it's just, like where the little cremated, like things on either side, where the little bucket of ashes go, the little boxes go.
And you can have been to one like
that. Yeah, you can buy like a little plot or like a little drawer, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was sitting there and my stomach made a grumble. Ooh. And I was like, okay, either I'm going to shit my pants in this funeral with this people that I only sort of tangentially knew. And I was like, excuse me. So I got up and I started walking down the hallways of this crematorium. And it is like marble.
Oh, God.
20-foot ceilings.
Clomp,
and it's,
clomp,
first of all, clomp. it's very loud. Second of all, I'm going and there's no doors. It's just wall to wall to wall of these little crematory, like the ash
bucket. You're going to have to shit in an ash bucket.
And there's nothing, like, there's one plant. And then I start, I'm like.
Did you think about going in the plant?
Well, it started getting to that point.
Oh, so, no.
When I went out of the chapel, there were two doors, and I had gone to the right. So in my head, I'm like, shit, I should have gone to the left. So that means I have to walk across the back of the funeral.
Oh,
that's,
no.
By the way, still going on, and people are taking turns, like, praying and singing.
Oh, God.
So the only bathroom is attached to the chapel, and it's so loud. And I go in there, and I was trying to be as quiet as I can, but it was, like, pretty explosive. And I was trying to be quiet, and then I was like, well, I can't flush it, because... First of all, that's not a real, it's not a great sound effect when someone's like, and now we lay our dear Aunt Martha to rest.
Well, neither is, and now we lay our dear Aunt Martha to rest.
It was awful. So then, so I go, but I don't flush. And I was like, all right, I'm going to, don't laugh. This was my logistics at the time. So I was like, okay, I'm going to stand at the door.
The panic you must have been feeling.
I was sweating. I was drenched in sweat. There was a guy at the back that I think maybe worked for the funeral home or maybe was like a strange family member, but he was just sitting back there and kind of watching me. So I was just standing in the doorway and I was like, okay, when they go to like walk out with the bodies, it'll be everyone will, it's the body or like the ash bucket thing. And there was like a double funeral. It's a whole thing. Anyway.
Good Lord.
And so I was like, okay, when everyone gets up to leave, that's when I'm going to flush because I'll know, like, it'll be kind of a ruckus. Everyone gets up to leave and this relative makes a beeline and tries to go in the bathroom. And I was like, no, you can't go. She's like, were you waiting? And I was like, yeah. And I just went in the bathroom and then I flushed.
Oh, no.
It was awful. So I had to push a lady out of the, it was, I was
that
bad.
That sounds like but a Seinfeld episode.
It was a Seinfeld episode. I was so trapped. But think about, anyway, sorry.
You know who else was trapped?
Mary Jo Capecchi on this island.
Whoever was in that.
Oh, afterwards.
That coffin, too.
God.
And Mary Jo Capecchi.
This
yes.
poor lady. She was stuck at a party with Ted Kennedy, who she hated. She called office boy, by the way.
And apparently she's asking him, supposedly, should I say, she's asking him to take her back to her hotel.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food. And before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
So they're headed, this is all according to Ted.
This is Teddy's version.
Teddy's version. So they're headed north on Chappaquiddick Road towards the ferry. Kennedy claims that he mistakenly took a wrong turn onto the unpaved, yes, it is called Dyke Road.
There's a lot of strange names in this.
Yeah, just, we're just going to all be aware that this is called Dyke Road, and then we're going to move on from it.
I was going to say, what is that guy's name? Is Huck Look?
Huck, yeah, and then there's another one that's my favorite.
There's a lot of names. We got a lot of names. So, they're
so
driving
they
on Dyke
turn
Road.
Onto, and it's relevant that it's unpaved, because if you don't know where you're going, but all of a sudden the feeling of the street changes
like
underneath
gravelly.
You probably, that sends off a red flag. They're like, oh, maybe I made a wrong turn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not to him.
Not if you're on crack or whatever.
Yes. He's, he says he's going approximately 20 miles per hour at this time. Unfamiliar with the road, he didn't realize the one-lane wooden plank bridge crossing Pooch Pond was quickly approaching. He then missed the entrance to Dyke Bridge and drove off the side and into the water. At the time, the bridge had no guardrail. And the pictures of this bridge, it's like a boardwalk.
It's rickety. I don't think it could carry a car.
I wouldn't even want to test it
in the daylight.
I don't even think I would want to walk across it, let alone drive a car across it, because there's literally like, there's like, you know, like,
it's no margin
there's wooden railroad ties. Mm-hmm. That's basically what is along the edge of it. That's how high the guardrail.
There's like no margin for error.
No, not at all. It's a very dicey situation for anyone.
And also the city just lets it exist that way.
I think now.
I'm sure now.
Now it has. But even now, like the guardrails are not. It's not like highway guardrails. It's still like a wooden fence.
Walk
basically.
The plank.
Yes. Now, while Kennedy claims all this took place around 11:15 p.m., Deputy Sheriff Huck Look, which, my God, that's hard to say.
What a name.
Had a different account. At 12:45 a.m., Look was headed home for the night when he spotted a dark car parked at the end of Chappaquiddick Road. This would have been 90 minutes after Kennedy claims his car had already gone over the bridge. Thinking the driver was lost, Look got out of his car and approached. As he yelled to the passengers to see if they needed help, the car quickly sped off down Dyke Road towards the bridge.
Interesting.
Very.
What a great sheriff. He just screams, hey, y'all need anything?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, they're gone.
So I watched I think it came out just within the past year or so, the movie Chappaquiddick.
I think 2017.
Yeah. Kate Mara is in it. She plays Mary Jo Kopechne. Ed Helms is in it. Andy Bernard is in it. He plays the cousin, Joe. I didn't recognize the main guy.
I forget what else he's been in.
Jason Clark, I think, is his name.
Mm-hmm.
It was good, and it was a pretty accurate account of everything. They didn't really take a lot of liberties.
Yeah, people said it follows the most, like, the famous book pretty well.
Yeah. And when this happens, the deputy literally just gets out of his car and starts walking down the road. And he's like, hey, you guys lost? And then the car just speeds off. And then he's like, guess I'll go home. He doesn't, like, even though he knew where that, he knew that that road led to this bridge, which essentially led to
death,
a beach, and that went nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, I guess they'll figure it out.
Hey, man, live and let live.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God.
So Kennedy claims that he was never parked on the road or saw the sheriff. However, the next morning, when Look was called to the scene of the accident, he recognized the car in the water as being the same one he had seen the night before. The car had landed in the water upside down, splintering the windshield. Kennedy somehow managed to escape and swim to the surface. He claims that he called Mary Jo's name several times, and when he did not see her, he dove back down 7 or 8 times to try and save her, but was unsuccessful. He then swam to the shore, where he rested for 15 minutes before walking back to the cottage where the party was still going on.
Is this a time for a rest? I don't mean to sound like a naysayer. And maybe the adrenaline of having just driven your car off of a bridge would give you superhuman strength. But he was in a plane crash, and it was well known that he had to wear a back brace and had really bad back pain.
Yeah.
So, like, really? He could dive down 7 or 8 times? Also, how did he get out of the car and couldn't get back into the car?
That's exactly what I was wondering when I was watching this film.
Did he ditch out before it went over?
If his window was down and he swam out.
Swim back in.
Or unless he, like, managed to open the car door and it slammed shut and then he couldn't get it open, just go back in the fucking door you came out of.
Yeah, if the door had shut and then it's in the water, you can't really open it.
Yeah, then
really
that makes sense. But, I mean, that's something.
How did the door get open, though?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if he managed to open it. Yeah, who knows? These are all details that you'd think he would have remembered and explain to the public.
No, he's shit hammered drunk.
But all these things, no one will ever know.
Well, according to him, he was not, but definitely he was.
Sure. During his walk back to the cottage, Kennedy claims he did not see any houses along the way where he thought he could stop and ask for help. However, the walk back would have taken him past 4 different houses where this would have been a possibility. The first of the houses, referred to as Dyke House, probably could rename that.
Well, it's the road.
Yeah.
Just rename the road.
Was 150 yards away from the bridge. Sylvia Malm, who lived at the house, said later that she was home, she had a phone, and she had left the porch light on that night when she went to bed.
Here's the thing, too. Ted Kennedy wasn't, like, a superstar famous, but he was famous enough, especially in
they would have definitely
in the
recognized
Northeast.
Him,
also,
sure.
Just the way he looked and sounded sort of like a Kennedy. If he would have knocked on the door and was like, there's been a crash.
Oh, they would have known who
they
he was.
They would have let him
100%.
In. Absolutely, they would have
I mean, if
in.
Ted Cruz knocks, first of all, if Ted Cruz knocks on my door,
he can get fucked.
He can go eat a dick. And hey, I will not help him.
I would be
no matter what he needs.
No, because he's going to use your body as nutrients so he can fuel his spaceship back to planet God knows where he's from.
Or it'll be like Invasion of the Body Snatchers and he'll just wear my skin.
I don't want to get political here, but Ted Cruz is a dick who's very harmful to everyone in the world.
Yes. And we just reelected him. And by we, I mean not Heather or I, hopefully anybody that we know.
God. But if you did, tell me why. Because first of all, I'd love to hear it. But also,
oh, man.
Don't ever do that again.
Yeah. Whew. 2020, you guys. That's what we're going to look forward to now.
Yeah, this whole month is pretty political.
Yeah.
It's bringing
a
lot of stuff up for me.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
All right. So he ignores that house. Also, in one of the things I was researching, they said this guy that was a kid, and he said that he grew up in one of the other 4 houses, and that he was like 4 years old at the time, and from age 3 to age 7, he slept with his bedroom light on every night because he was like afraid of the dark, and his bedroom faced that road. So, like, the light would have been on in his
also,
bedroom.
Also, even if there are no lights, who cares?
Someone's dying.
Just knock on the door. Bang on the door. Anyone in their right mind that was trying to get help would have done that.
Because even if he knocks on the door, but it was the 60s, they probably would have just let him in. If someone knocked on the door and said, hey, there'd been a car accident, I'm like, you ain't coming in, but I'll call the cops for
you.
Yeah,
yeah. And if you see it's, like, a political figure, which you clearly recognize, and he's dripping wet, you're probably going to let him in.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't, well, I mean, it makes sense because he didn't want it reported. That's why you wouldn't stop, for
sure. Right, exactly. The motivation here is cover up.
Exactly. Well, once back at the party.
Oh, Kennedy, he went back to the party.
He went back to the party. He walked all the way back to the cottage where the party was going on and discreetly summons his cousin Joe and Paul Markham and told them what had happened. So no one else knew what was going on.
It was like, how discreetly? He was wet.
Well, in the movie, and I do think this is actually what happened, he gets back to the party. He, like, slips into the back seat of this car that's parked next to the kind of patio. And one of the guys comes outside to smoke. And he's like,
hey, man.
He's like, go get Joe. And they're like,
Joey will take care of it.
Yeah. Joey was kind of known as he'll take care of everything. He was kind of the, not the scapegoat, but kind of just like kind of their bitch.
The family fixer kind of guy, too.
Yeah, yeah. He wasn't, I believe the Kennedys actually adopted him. I'm not sure if in the movie he he talks about how his parents both died when he was young.
Okay.
So they adopted him. So he was kind of like brothers to them.
Okay.
A brother to them. So he tells Paul and Joe what happened, and then all three of them drive back down to the bridge.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Gargan and Markham both get in the water to try and rescue Mary Jo, but were unable to open any of the doors or bust out the windows.
So timing-wise, according to Ted Kennedy, mm-hmm. So let's say he has to walk 30 or 45 minutes.
If that,
30 minutes. And he gets, so then she's in the water, he's trying to save her, 15 minutes to shore, so that's 30 minutes, then another 30-minute walk back, so now she's been in the car for an hour.
And then she's still alive.
Yeah. And then they go back over there and can't open the thing. There's no way.
She's alive when they're trying to get her out.
Allegedly.
And according to the medical examiner, she was.
I think she was alive, but were they trying to get her out?
Yes.
So they say, we went back and we tried and we couldn't do anything. I'm like, bullshit, because if you were there while she was still alive, you could have been like, swim down and come back up. Because I think they said that you could get like disoriented in the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And she may have thought she was swimming up to get out when in fact, because the car was upside down, she was swimming like towards the wheel well. And so she wouldn't have known to go down to get out.
Well, in the movie, Andy Bernard is trying to swim down to get her. And he keeps saying, like, it's too dark. I can't see anything. Yeah. So I don't know if they ever even, like, even if they were trying to help her, I don't know if they ever made contact with her.
Yeah.
The other guy, Paul Markham, in the movie, has a bum knee. And he essentially just sits on the car that's submerged while...
sink it further.
While Andy Bernard, just keeps diving down to help out. While Kennedy is just laying on the bridge this whole time.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's like, oh, what the fuck have I gotten myself into?
I'm real bummed.
Yeah. Well, after several failed attempts, Gargan and Markham claim that they drove Kennedy back to the ferry landing where there was a public phone booth. Both men allege they told a now hysterical Kennedy that he had to report the accident. Supposedly, Kennedy promised he would. However, instead of calling the police right there and then, he dove back into the water and swam 500 feet across the channel to Edgartown. Why?
He's bizarre.
Why? That makes zero sense to me.
I was going to say, and some people said, like, yeah, kids could swim across it, that it's not that hard of a swim.
But if you were just in a wreck, plus you have a bad back from a plane accident, is this really something that you're going to be able to endure?
I don't know.
It's very bizarre. Well, Gargan and Markham headed back to the party to do damage control. They later stated they thought Ted was going to report the incident when he arrived at Edgartown, so they didn't bother reporting it themselves.
Oh, come on. Also, that's a lie. That's a lie. I feel like that they didn't, if Joey was the fixer of the family, they weren't going to go call the cops on a Kennedy. Mm-mm. That's like their whole livelihood is working for this family. They're not going to whistleblow
on the
family.
No, I think they all made a pact right there that
we'll deal with this in the morning.
We'll see how this plays out.
Because there was argument of, well, we should just say that she drove off on her own and that you were never even in the car and she must have just crashed on her own. And they're like, no, people... At this time, when they were trying to get the body, apparently they felt like someone saw them, and they were worried, like, no, people saw us, they're going to report it.
Yeah. Well, interesting you say that. While Kennedy claims he swam across the channel back to the mainland, C. Remington Ballou has always wondered if that's what really happened. Ballou and his family had been on their boat, which was close to the ferry, around 2 a.m. the night in question. He told the New Bedford Standard Times he saw a small boat carrying three people turn off its lights and motor and then drift towards a larger boat that had crossed the channel. The bigger boat then also turned off its lights. A few minutes later, the small boat started its engine back and sailed out of the harbor. Kennedy's press aide, here we go, Dick Drain.
Oh,
that is his name. That is his name.
Somebody they were interviewing on one of the podcasts' name was Dick Tool. And I was like, I texted Austin Guttery and I was just like, this is a real name. Dick Tool.
Dick Drain is.
Dick Drain is even better than
Dick Tool.
If
your last name is Drain, do not name your kid Richard.
Go by Richie. Go by Rich.
Yeah, and if you want, if Richard is something you're dead set on, don't go by Dick.
Back in the day, though, there were Dicks all around.
I mean, there still are.
Same. That was like a popular name.
Yeah.
We had no Dicks in my family, but not by name.
Yeah. By name, I don't think we do in mine either. Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, you know what? Let's bring Dick back.
No one.
I've been trying to.
I do know Richards. I do know like one or two, I think. They do not go by Dick.
You say my cousin's name Richard, and he goes by Richard.
Yes. As one should.
The whole name.
Well, Dick Drain said that what Baloo saw had absolutely nothing to do with the senator. But Baloo has always wondered whether they were somehow connected to the accident.
Yeah, maybe they were. That's how he got back instead of swimming all the way back.
Well, in the movie, that is how they depict him getting back.
Is on a boat? On a small boat?
They're on like a, yeah, like a like tiny a, little boat
like you a would dinghy?
Have little paddles for. They're at the payphone.
Dick Drain said there was no dinghy.
They're at the payphone, and instead of using the fucking payphone there, Kennedy like goes over and just unties this little kayak, and they're all like, whose boat is that? And he's like, I don't know. And they
he's just like, catch you later, bitches.
Well, and the other two jump in and help him paddle across.
Oh, God.
To Edgartown. He gets out and the other two paddle it back.
God.
So yeah,
they get back to the party all that. Sweaty and insane, and the girls are like, where have you guys been? Oh, we're jerking each other off.
Yeah, they did not tell the girls when they got back what was going on. Mm-mm. Or even any of the other men.
Mm-hmm.
They said, and then people were like, well, where are Ted and Mary Jo? And they're like, oh, they probably went back to their hotel.
Yeah, they were tired. Who knows?
Yeah, and they'd be like, if they asked any more questions, they're like, just go to bed. Just go to bed.
Mm, don't worry about it.
Also, suspiciously, while Kennedy claims that Mary Jo asked for him to take her back to her hotel, her purse and hotel room key were later found at the cottage.
And someone else's pocketbook, as they kept calling it, and how my Tennessee relatives call it, someone else's pocketbook was in the car with Mary Jo.
Interesting.
Simple explanation. She grabs a purse. It's not hers. Accidentally grabs a purse and jumps in the car because they're trying to leave and make the ferry.
Sure.
Nefarious explanation is Ted and the other woman were in the car. Mary Jo was asleep in the back. They didn't know. They crashed the car. They leave her. There's so many theories.
There's a lot of conspiracy theories with this one.
And also just with me.
And Heather has her own, I'm sure. Yes. Well, when Kennedy, however he arrived back at Edgartown, he did not report the accident.
All right.
Instead, he went back to his hotel room, changed into dry clothes, and laid down. At 2:55 a.m., he complained to the hotel owner that he had been awakened by a noisy party.
People think that he did this as an alibi. As an alibi, so the owner can be like, yeah, this dick came and knocked on my door. Yeah. It was rude.
I agree with that. Meanwhile, Mary Jo was most likely gasping for her last breaths while trapped in a car fully submerged in water.
Horrifying. What a terrible way to die.
They
said it took, 3 to 4 hours?
Yes. I got very emotional during this scene in the movie, because she's trapped in this fully submerged car with an air pocket, just like, you know you're gonna die. It's just, you can't get out. She's screaming, Ted, trying to get out. You can't. And now in everything, since I'm a parent, I just imagine if that was Ella.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if this was my daughter's last moments, my God.
I feel like you would.
You're just racked with fear, and there's nothing you can. You're like, well, I just gotta wait for this to happen.
Death is coming. Pray to whoever.
Yeah. At 8 a.m. the next morning, Gargan and Markham found Kennedy at his hotel having breakfast with some friends and acting as if nothing was wrong.
He's like, ah, what a wild night last night. Mm-hmm. It was a fun party.
He still had not reported anything to the police.
Okay, buddy.
The three men then took the ferry back to the island where Kennedy used the payphone that they had just been standing beside hours before. However, he still did not call the cops. Instead, he made a series of calls to his lawyers, friends, and father.
Yeah, they said he called the Kennedy compound and then the speechwriter and advisor mm-hmm. to JFK and then a lawyer and then back to the compound. And
basically everyone but the police.
Pretty much. And the big conspiracy cover-up was that they tried to, newspapers and police officers tried to get the payphone records to see, like, who he called and what order. And the phone company, interestingly, would only release, like, so many numbers. Like, they would say, oh, these are the only numbers that were available.
Everyone's in their pocket.
For real.
A team of advisors, including Robert Sorensen and Ted McNamara, which had been very influential in JFK's presidency.
Yep.
Soon arrived to help him get out of the mess he'd created. Around the same time Kennedy was casually enjoying breakfast, a fisherman and his young son discovered Kennedy's car in the water with Mary Jo's body still inside. They ran to the nearest house, Dyke House, and the police were called.
They did the right thing.
Yes, they found the body around 8 a.m. By 8:20, the police were called. So that's how quickly he could have also got help.
Yeah, response time. Yes. Especially at nighttime, it probably would have been faster. There's not other crimes or anything going on.
Once the police arrived, they realized a diver would be needed, so they called one in to further assist. John Farrer, captain of the Edgartown Fire Rescue Unit, arrived with gear and within 10 minutes had recovered Mary Jo's body.
Wow. And he said he was always on the ready. So if they would have called him the night before, he's like, it would have been no problem. It would have been the same amount of time.
He said he found her body in the well of the back seat of the overturned submerged car. Rigor mortis had set in. Her hands were clasping the back seat and her face was turned upward, most likely to where an air pocket would have been. He believed that based on all of this, Mary Jo suffocated rather than drowned. He also stated that she was most likely alive for 3 to 4 hours and would have probably survived if a more timely rescue attempt had been conducted.
Here's where there's a couple of varying accounts, because several law enforcement officers who were there when they pulled the body out of the car, one guy said, it was the worst thing I've ever seen. Sorry, guys, it's about to get pretty graphic. He's like, it's the worst thing I've ever seen. When they pulled her body out, they pushed down on her stomach and water just poured out of her face. It mm-hmm. poured out of her nose and mouth. But the medical examiner and other people said, no, that's she didn't drown, that there was just a minimal amount of water, like, in her mouth, like she had suffocated before that. So that's the question.
Is it one of those things where you have that false memory because
you think that's what it would have looked like? And the guy's like, that's the first drowned body I ever saw, so I would never forget it. But here's the thing about human beings and their memories. They suck ass.
Yeah.
And you can't really rely on anything you remember.
Yes.
That's
I think in one of the first episodes about how
false memories.
You remember something, you're just remembering the last time you remembered it.
That is correct. And that's why I write a lot of stuff down in my diary, because I'm like, oh, that happened, you know, later on. So
even I'll be like, something will happen, or even this happens all the time with, like, milestones with Ella. I'll be like, oh, there's no way that I'll forget the day this happened, because she waved for the first time or something. And then I'll just decide later to write it down in the baby book. By the next day, I'm like, what?
Yeah, I can't remember what happened. Well, just life gets in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
so this guy's like, no, I completely remember they pulled the body out and this happened. And then another person says, I remember with perfect clarity when they pulled the body out, no water came out of it. So it's just like, who do you believe? Yeah. They're both law enforcement
they
officers.
They both probably think they are 100%
they
right.
They are right. And the question is the water guy trying to support the Kennedy theory of, oh, the car went in the water, she immediately drowned and there was nothing we could have done, versus the truth where she suffocated because she was up in the wheel well holding, they said that her fingernails were broken and striated from trying to claw up higher towards and more air. So that's
horrific.
I think that's the more likely scenario, that she suffocated in that air pocket.
Well, later at the inquest into Mary Jo's death, Farrer would testify that it looked as if she were holding herself up to get a last breath of air. It was a consciously assumed position. She didn't drown. She died of suffocation in her own air void. It took her at least 3 or 4 hours to die. God. I could have had her out of that car 25 minutes after I got the call, but he, Ted Kennedy, didn't call.
Man. Stuff like that where it's like, God, your own ass or embarrassment is not. And also, you crashed a car. You saved a person's life. That actually looks better than what happened of you trying to cover it up.
When you've grown up in this family, though, that tries to cover anything possibly scandalous up, you're a senator, you're married.
You're with a blonde-haired girl.
A much younger girl. You've been drinking, probably doing drugs. There's just so much. And then you're also just not thinking clearly.
That's true. It's just like self-preservation.
Exactly.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money. But nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Well, after Farrar had recovered the body, the police ran the car's license plate and discovered it was registered to Ted Kennedy.
You know, they probably looked at each other like, ooh,
what?
Wait a minute. Yeah,
and everyone collectively, their buttholes just clenched because they're like, what do we do now? We can't actually investigate this. Yeah. Kennedy, while this was going on, was still at the payphone when he learned the police had discovered his car and Mary Jo's body.
God.
He and Markham then headed back to Edgartown to the police station so he can probably try and save some face.
Yeah.
While his cousin Joe returned to the cottage to tell the other Boiler Room girls what had happened.
If this tells you a little bit about the Kennedy personality, they said that he shows up to the police station and the sheriff is out at the scene of the accident or whatever and comes back and goes into his office and behind his desk, using his phone, mm-hmm, with his feet up on his desk, is Ted Kennedy.
Yeah, this is in the movie. That's what happens.
Oh, did they have it in the movie?
Yeah, he and Markham walk into the sheriff's station, and the sheriff's secretary is like, "He's not here." And they're just like,
"Who gives a shit?
We'll be in here and just go in." And they're like, "She's like, that's his private office." And they're like, "Bye,
shut up, bitch."
Yeah, I mean, it's like he just thought he was literally above the law.
Yeah, they do whatever they want to do.
So once back at the police station, Kennedy made a few more calls and then issued this statement.
On July 18th, 1969, at approximately 11:15 p.m. in Chappaquiddick, Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, I was driving my car on Main Street on my way to get to the ferry back to Edgartown. I was unfamiliar with the road and turned right onto Dyke Road instead of bearing a hard left on Main Street. After proceeding approximately 1/2 mile on Dyke Road, I descended a hill and came upon a narrow bridge. The car went off the side of the bridge. There was one passenger with me, one Miss Mary, a former secretary of my brother, Senator Robert Kennedy. The car turned over and sank into the water and landed with the roof resting on the bottom. I attempted to open the car door and the window, but I have no recollection of how I got out of the car. I came to the surface and then repeatedly drove down to the car to attempt to see if the passenger was still in the car. I was unsuccessful in this attempt. I was exhausted and in a state of shock. I recall walking back to where my friends were eating. There was a car parked in front of the cottage and I climbed into the back seat. I then asked for someone to bring me back to Edgartown. I remember walking around for a period and going back to my hotel room. When I fully realized what happened in the morning, I immediately contacted the police.
And that's exactly how it went.
And also, if you listen to the recording, very spot on impression.
Very spot on.
I gotta update my LinkedIn accreditation.
Absolutely, yes.
Spot on Kennedy impression.
So that's issued. Then on July 25th, 1969, 7 days after the accident, Kennedy pleaded guilty to the charge of leaving the scene of an accident causing bodily injury. Kennedy's attorney, as well as the prosecutors,
oh, I'm sure,
agreed that his sentence should be suspended due to his age. Okay, he was 37.
He's not that old.
I don't even understand why that came into play.
He might die before the sentence.
Exactly. His character.
Well.
And prior reputation. Eh. If we're going to take all those things into consideration, then book his ass. they totally missed the mark there.
Put this bitch in jail.
The judge agreed with them and suspended his 2-month jail sentence. So he essentially just walked out of there with a slap on the wrist.
God.
In announcing the sentence, Judge James Boyle referred to Kennedy's unblemished record and said that he, quote, has already been and will continue to be punished far beyond anything this court can impose.
Oh, his sadness is enough of a punishment. Let's say that about all criminals.
Yes.
They feel very bad.
Can you imagine this being anyone else and this being the outcome?
I mean, if you're a celebrity.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much.
Just a normal person, which is what most people are.
No. Yeah.
Well, later that evening, Kennedy made a televised statement about the accident in which he said things like,
only reasons of health have prevented my wife from accompanying me to the regatta. There's no truth whatever to the widely widely circulated suspicions of immoral conduct regarding my behavior. I was not driving under the influence of liquor. My conduct during the hours immediately after the accident makes no sense to me at all. My doctor informed me that I suffered a cerebral concussion and shock, but I'm not trying to use this medical condition to escape responsibility. I have all kinds of scrambled thoughts, like the scrambled eggs I ate the next morning immediately. It went through my mind after the accident. I wondered whether the girl might still be alive somewhere out in that immediate area, whether some awful curse actually does hang over our family, whether it was some justifiable reason for me to doubt what had happened and delay my report, whether somehow the awful weight of this incredible incident might in some way pass from my shoulders.
Poor him.
Do you think I should resign? Because I'm not, bitches.
No. Not only are you not, but everyone was heavily in favor of him remaining in office. And in 1970, he was re-elected.
Hell yeah.
I feel like this is what just happened.
I'm going all the way to the top.
Well, almost. But in 1979, Kennedy announced his candidacy for presidency, but lost the Democratic nomination to incumbent Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter's like, I'm just a peanut farmer and I haven't killed any women that you know of.
Well, he also lost in a landslide to Reagan.
Well.
But the Chappaquiddick incident was thought to have been a major catalyst for Kennedy losing.
You kill one girl and suddenly you can't be president.
Imagine that. It's interesting to think if this happened now, how differently this would be.
First of all, they could probably track the whole night with their cell phones.
Oh, yeah.
There'd be pictures, there'd be Snapchats. Even if there weren't, there'd probably be private texts. There would be pings of cell phones to know if she really was there or wasn't there. And man, yeah, that'd be a lot different.
Oh, yes. And again, that's like technology.
I think that's what's wrong, just to take a little political diversion. I think that's what's wrong with Donald Trump is that he's so stupid and he tries to do stuff that they would have done in the 60s. But there are like video cameras and computers.
That's a very good point.
It's like he's like, well, you know, Acosta hit that girl in her face whenever she tried to take the microphone away. It's like, well, there's like 17 different cameras and we can like see that happened.
He'll
say like, I never made fun of a handicapped person. And there's a video of
Donald,
him immediately making fun
of him. It was on a nationally broadcast thing. Yeah. Everyone saw it.
Like, you could do crazy stuff probably back in the day and there would be no video of it or, you know, footage. And now it's like, we have, it's on Twitter.
Well, that's when he was peaking. So I think he just wants to live in his bubble that everything is still in like the 60s and 70s.
I guess that's true.
Oh, God. When will he die? I'm probably on a list now for saying something like that.
I mean,
I'm fine. I was already on a list.
We're on the list already.
Yeah, I'm on a lot of lists.
What is the suspicious or suppressive persons?
I'm definitely on that list.
A couple of SPs.
So I'll the side note, I'll put it on our Instagram, but when I came out of teaching at DCH last night, so we've talked before how there's a Scientology Center down in Deep Ellum. Just a couple of blocks away from the comedy club where we always perform. And they are now targeting people because there was a little pamphlet on my windshield with handwritten times of when I should come by to do my personality test.
Come on by.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it. Let's do it as a mini-so.
Oh, man.
Christy becomes a Scientologist.
We're never going to get them to stop calling us. That's if we true. Go.
You got to take a burner phone.
Well, the poor Kopechne family has kind of been lost during this entire thing.
And Mary Jo, the headline said Ted and blonde secretary in accident.
She can't even be given a name.
No.
Another thing, interestingly, that was going on the same weekend that helped Kennedy because it gave them time to kind of divert attention and come up with different stories was the Apollo 11 landing.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So JFK's like biggest thing he wanted to happen during his presidency is coming to fruition while his fat, dumb brother is just fucking everything up once again.
He's like, pay no attention to me. Look up at the sky.
Yeah.
There's a spaceship.
Yes. Well, the medical examiner ruled Mary Jo's death as an accidental drowning and no autopsy was performed. However, 2 months later, on September 18th, District Attorney Edmund Dennis attempted to, if you guys just heard that, Heather just gave a huge smooch to Lucy.
I'm sorry, I love this dog so much.
Edmund Dennis attempted to secure an exhumation of Mary Jo's body to perform a belated autopsy, citing blood found on Kopechne's long sleeve blouse and in her mouth and nose, which may or may not be consistent with death by drowning. The discovery of the blood was made when her clothes were given to authorities by the funeral director.
This is some of the conspiracy stuff, too, comes in, where supposedly Richard Nixon hated the Kennedys, and they were, like, the bane of his existence. And when this shit started going down, the guy who later would be, like, the Watergate guy was like, his personal, like, spy, pretty much, or, like, personal PI, sent him out there. And they said that, like, stuff, like, her pocketbook, this guy in a blue suit showed up and was like, I work with the government, give me that. And they're like, oh, okay. And he just walked off with it.
To the cops?
To the cops, yeah.
Wow.
And, like, he would go in and, like, basically was trying to find ways to make it look worse or whatever. Like,
so you think that the blood may have been planted?
I mean, I don't know.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I think it could have been caused by...
like a car accident.
Yeah, I mean anything happening in a car. And the windshield was destroyed, so if she'd hit that, perhaps...
Back then, nobody wore seatbelts. It was a free-for-all.
Exactly. Well, Mary Jo's parents opposed this request. There had been rumors that their daughter might have been pregnant, and they felt that the only reason they wanted to perform an autopsy was to confirm or deny this. So they're looking out for her of, like, a possible other scandal.
Like, reputational.
And, yeah, and her daughter, in death, her name's going to be dragged through the mud even more than it already
has. And before she went to, she was dating a Foreign Service officer, and they were getting serious, and he kept wanting to get engaged, and she kept saying no because she wanted to work on her career. And then a couple weeks before this, she had called her parents and was like, I got to tell you three big things. And they're like, what's that? And she's like, I decided to work with this political consultant, so I'm going to start a new job. And me and the Foreign Service officer decided to get engaged, and then something came up.
Her dad got on the phone to say hi.
To say hi. And then
she never said the
they
third
got distracted
thing.
And she never said the third thing. So maybe she was pregnant.
Oh,
or maybe not. Maybe she, I don't know. She was like, Ted Kennedy's been stealing money.
Or maybe her, I mean, by all accounts, her and Ted weren't having an affair, but
no.
Maybe they were,
they said,
and she was pregnant with his baby.
They said she hated him. Like, she didn't have any respect for him. All she loved RFK and basically was like, why weren't you the one that got killed?
Yeah.
And the same with kind of all the Boiler Room Girls. But they all went through that together, Bobby's death together. She was at the hotel the night that Bobby died. And so, and, you know, at the funeral.
And knew his wife and was friends with his wife.
Was super close to his wife. She was in the car with them, like, leaving the funeral. Like, she was, like, family.
Mm-hmm.
So even though she, it's like your best friend dies and his little brother's a piece of shit. But you're like, I just miss Bobby. And, like, he does too. Like, I get it.
I can kind of be close to
them. I don't love you. I don't, but, you know, it's fine. And then Bobby, or not Bobby, Ted Kennedy had this like years long relationship with this lady named Helga that was like more, it wasn't just a sexual relationship. Like, she will never confirm or deny it, but like, by all accounts, this was like his best friend and love of his life is this lady named Helga who lived in New York and like did a bunch of fundraisers for him. So to me, I don't think he and Mary Jo were like romantically involved at all. I think she, you know, they were united by Bobby's death, and then they each individually
had makes it even more ridiculous that he wouldn't have reported it when it happened.
Yeah, or helped her, you know.
If that's what he's worried about.
Yeah.
Well, a judge upheld the parents' request, and the body was not exhumed. Years later, Mary Jo's mother said that not having this autopsy performed was the biggest mistake of her life.
I bet, because you just always wonder.
Yeah.
At the time, it was raw. And two, they were...
And you're grieving, and you're just not thinking
clearly. Well, when they were grieving, all these Kennedy handlers came to their house and was like, we don't want you to go through anything. We don't want you to stress. We're going to have somebody answer your phone, answer the door. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. And later on, people said they were screening. They didn't want...
Oh, yeah.
They didn't want newspapers coming and nosy people to come and get information from the Kopechnys. So then they didn't get a chance to talk to Ted. It was kind of like, oh, let this all blow over. Ted will come and talk to you. You'll get the real story. So then a couple months later, they get this invitation to go to Ted's house. They show up to Ted's house. It's like a full-out cocktail party. So they think they're going to show up and get information. They show up and it's a party. Well, then they're they're photographed at this party. And then the headlines are Mary Jo Kopechne's family and the Kennedys are super close. They've forgiven him. He's fine. It was like a Kennedy trick, basically, to make Ted Kennedy not look like a douchebag. Oh, look, her family forgave him, so he must be fine.
So not only did these people lose their daughter, but they were robbed of their grieving process.
They have no idea what the last hours of her life is
like. And they weren't allowed to, like, grieve with friends or other family. In the movie, they do have one of the Kennedy aides, essentially, goes over to the parents' house, and someone knocks on the... One of the neighbors knocks on the door to, like, bring a casserole, and the aide's like, oh, I'll get it. You don't need to get up, and won't let the neighbors come in and talk to them or anything.
They isolated them.
Yeah, it's so sad. Oh, God. Well, the Kopechne family did not bring any legal action against Kennedy, but did receive a payment of $90,904 from him personally, odd amount, and $50,000 from his insurance company.
Do you know what that $90,000 amount was for?
No.
They calculated her future earnings.
Oh, that's right.
When someone dies and you sue for wrongful death, you can sue for lots of stuff. So if you're married, you can sue for loss of consortium. So that's like the pleasure of having a spouse, of like helping you take care of your kid and having sex with you and watching TV. And that has a value on it. And then also you can have, future earnings, and then just like, the other members of the family can like recover. So the fact that they're like, well, she probably would have made this much money. Here you go. I mean, really?
I've talked before how I served on that jury for the wrongful death case for the infant. And that was something we had to decide in the earnings, was on several different counts, like how much the father was going to be awarded, how much his mother was going to be awarded. We basically calculated he was, I think, 10 months when it happened, or 8 months. We basically assigned a value to what he probably would have lived to be. I mean, we awarded them like $62 million. It was a crazy amount. But like, because we were like, well, he was a baby.
True.
He
could have been Bill Gates.
Yeah. You never know like what his life would have looked like. But my point is,
I don't want to break your heart, but they appealed that and probably didn't get that.
Oh, they didn't. We knew they weren't going to get it after they got that, because she didn't have insurance.
Oh, good.
The daycare. We didn't know that at the time, though. However, I think it sends a message.
Oh, yeah.
But also, my point is, no matter how much money you're given, your kid is still dead.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It does not matter.
No amount of money.
There's no amount of money that's going to change how you feel about that. Well, the Kopechnys later explained their decision not to take legal action by saying, we figured that people would think we were looking for blood money. They also gave half of the settlement they got to their church. So sad. Mary Jo's parents ended up using the money they had been saving for her wedding to pay for her funeral.
That's so sad.
That is so heartbreaking.
God.
I can't. That's something you can't even think about for too long. Well, we've talked kind of about some other theories that people have about what might have happened that night. Some think when Kennedy spotted the sheriff, he got out of the car and walked back to the party, fearing what it would look like if he was caught with Mary Jo. Supposedly, Mary Jo then would have tried to drive his car back, but being unfamiliar with the area, not used to driving a larger car, and having had a few drinks, gets lost and runs off the bridge.
I don't think that's true, but they did say that she was not a big drinker, and if even like three drinks, she would have been wasted because she just never drank.
Yeah.
Where on the other hand, I can drink about two bottles of wine and I'm fine.
I can go through a six pack pretty quickly.
But I've seen it and you've seen me.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes.
We ate.
We're pretty good.
We ate.
Another theory, and this is the one you kind of mentioned earlier.
This one I think is more likely.
So Kennedy and another woman from the party had actually left together, and unbeknownst to them, Mary Jo was asleep in the back seat of the car.
See, and even if it was not Kennedy and another woman, if it was just him by himself, they said that, again, Mary Jo only had a few drinks, but she never drank, got shit-faced, and she had stomach problems, and that she would not be the type of person that would be like, take me back, I want to go back, that she would just be like, well, I'll just go and like go to sleep, and I don't want to bother anybody. They said she was really trying to be really accommodating. So what if Kennedy was going to try to drive back, and Mary Jo was asleep in the back seat, and he really did just drive off the bridge and didn't even know she was back there?
Maybe. I think he knew she was in the car.
Yeah.
But to that point, though, to this theory, a lot of people that support this say this would make sense with the lack of injury she had on her face and head, because
she would have the windshield
was, yeah. But he also didn't have injuries.
True. That's true.
He claims, in the piece of shit he was, he wore a neck brace to her funeral.
Well, I mean, you know, he's injured.
And in the movie, he shows him putting it on, and his cousin comes in, and he's like, what are you doing? His cousin is the only one in the movie that seems to realize what a piece of shit
it's kind of he bullshit, is,
yeah. And that he's lying to everyone and trying to gain sympathy. And he's basically saying, what do you think? You think I'll get sympathy from my constituents if I wear this? He's like, no, it looks fake. Take it off. You're an asshole. And he ends up wearing it anyways.
Well, and they said that this caused Ted's wife to really start drinking a lot more. She had a miscarriage 5 days after it happened due to the stress.
Sure.
She started drinking. She was a flat out like piss drunk alcoholic for the rest of her life after this. And that also Joe Kennedy, when Ted told him about it, stopped eating and died 4 months later. And Ted's big thing was always like, I killed my dad. I killed my dad. I was a disappointment.
Well,
I killed my dad.
Wrong.
I mean, he might not be wrong.
In the movie, his father is very mean to him. It's kind of funny though.
Well, I mean, he deserves a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, we know Joe Kennedy's a dick.
There was another theory that the car only went halfway off the bridge, and then Kennedy tries to jump out, and upon doing that, kind of displaces the weight, which pushes it over into the water.
Yeah, there's this investigator that got hired after the fact that was like, so sure this is what happened, but all I could remember was that this investigator was famous for swimming in the East River. Like Kramer.
Jersey?
No, in the East River in New York. Like
Kramer
on Seinfeld. So it's like, I am discounting.
That's such a good episode.
It's so good.
Just trash and stuff flying by.
Yeah, just, and he was like, don't do it at low tide.
Well, my question with these theories are, does any of this make it better or worse than what probably actually happened? Like, why do we need another theory?
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know why, if none of these things seem particularly bad, his story actually seems like the worst. So why would he be hiding a better sounding theory than any other ones?
If he didn't know she was in the car,
that absolves him.
Yeah, why wouldn't you just, I mean, go report it to the police, like, hey, I was in this accident, my car's in the river, so tomorrow if somebody finds it, this is why.
FYI. And then they're like, a lady was in it. And he's like, a lady was in it? What? Yeah. I don't know.
I don't buy it.
It doesn't make sense.
I think that what happened is he knew she was in the car and did not try. And I think he may have actually tried to save her.
Like jumped back in once or twice.
I think just because he doesn't want, if he had saved her, this wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think he probably tried to get her out and couldn't, but then went into panic mode and cover up mode. And the fact that he claims that he had doctors say he had a concussion and everything, and he was in a state of shock, and he didn't know that's why he didn't report it. In the movie, they have this doctor come in, and the advisors are like, all right, so the doctor will say he had a concussion, blah, blah, blah. And the doctor's like, I haven't even examined him. And they're like, and you're not going to. That's not the
point. That's exactly what happened on OJ.
Yeah.
where they're like, come in and just say these things. And the doctor's like, well, that doctor was like, yeah, right.
Yeah, so they're getting paid off and pressured by a political family.
They're like, do you want to lose your license?
Yeah, and so they basically concoct this story of why he didn't.
Did the doctor even say that? Because the guy who wrote the speech was the speechwriter for JFK's Ask Not What Your Country Can Do For You speech. So they just got a really good speechwriter to write this televised apology.
That's exactly who did it. Yeah. It's a whole mess. And
the sad thing is no one will know the truth.
No.
Because after he apologized, after he apologized on the news, it was not mentioned really until a book was published in 1992 that really laid out, and it was like 20 years of research. This guy dedicated his life to this book, and his name's Leo Damore. And that's what the movie is based on, and and it was tons of research. And he told his kid, he's like, I get calls that are like, stop looking into this, stop asking questions.
Still to this day?
Well, he's dead.
I guess in the 90s.
Yeah, in the 90s. And he told his son one time, he's like, I have a box of things for you under my bed. And he took all of his tapes and everything and all of his research and took it to Kent State, like their library. Wow. But his son is like thinking that somebody's gone in to quote unquote look at it, but then like scrubbed it for some of the stuff. But yeah, sadly, Leo Damore killed himself. He committed suicide, and his son, after they did an autopsy on him, they found a brain tumor pushing down on a part of his brain that can cause like suicidal ideations and thoughts. And his son said that both Ted Kennedy and his dad, the son thinks that they were aluminum poisoning, which is like over a long period, because there was a comment by one of the Kennedy camp, like one of the people in the Kennedy camp, that was like, oh, if you want to assassinate someone, you don't have to just use a bullet. They're slow and painful.
How would
ways.
They have gotten the aluminum?
I think the son is making a documentary that hasn't come out yet. That's his dad's tombstone said, seek ye the truth or ye shall seek the truth or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of inspired the son to like start writing a documentary and making a documentary
so
about
his
dad. His dad did all this research and had like the true story.
Yeah.
And then he also thinks that Ted Kennedy because Ted Kennedy died of a brain tumor too.
Oh, so he thinks that the family did this to both of
them. That Ted Kennedy was getting old and was starting to be like, I feel bad about this. This is what really happened.
Deathbed confession. Well, that's what the family of Mary Jo are hoping for, is a deathbed confession. If someone knows something,
and they'll finally,
upon their deathbed, they're finally gonna say,
Ted Kennedy
really
sure didn't.
Nope. Maybe Joe or Paul or somebody else that knows something, but this, I can't imagine anything. You already lose a parent, a kid, and the second worst thing is not knowing what really happened.
It's like no closure.
No, zero closure. Your mind plays out a million different scenarios, and you just drive yourself crazy.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It's awful. So what do you think? What do we think is the explanation for what happened?
I think
it's the what...
What he says.
Yeah.
I think that she was asleep in the backseat, and that he saw her and was like, oh, she's back there. Fuck it. I'm going to drive back to town anyway. And then he does crash and then can't. Like, I don't know that she was like volitionally riding with him just based on like her injuries and the fact that she was in the backseat. But then again, if she was in the front seat and it crashed headfirst in there, she would have swam upward to try to get to air. So I don't know.
Yeah. I think she may have been found in the back seat because of the way the car was positioned. That's where the air was.
Yeah, she was trying to get to the air.
So. I think that they probably left together. So Kennedy said too that he didn't know that bridge would have led to a beach that they couldn't get past. But it was well known that he and Mary Jo had been to that beach before. So a lot of people assume, while it doesn't sound like she was having a relationship with him, that maybe they were going there to do something, or
who knows?
Yeah. But I think that he knew they were riding together. He crashed and knowingly left her there to die. And what a sad, sad way to go.
Well, does that define him?
Ooh, I like how you brought that back.
Does this incident that he had take away the things that he...
I'm going to be thinking about this question long into the night, because this really is a brain teaser.
You know, it's like, does the one incident of him being, you know, he's in his 30s or whatever.
37.
And, yeah, in his 30s, fuck some up. Do you think if you did something now that should define you everything for the rest of your life?
I think, I would hope it wouldn't. I think that there are kind of two types of people in this world. One that would learn from this and use it to change for the better. And one that would, well, I guess three types. The other type would let it define them and just spiral into a depression and it would sink them. Or the third, they run from it and have no accountability and just kind of continue to go on with their life as if it didn't happen. I mean, like to think I would be the first type of person.
Well, hopefully. And I mean, you know, and was the good that he did in repentance for the crime that he committed, you know, whether it was a, you know, on paper, a homicide or, you know, just hanging over his soul, that, you know, he ended up pushing for economic sanctions against South Africa and the apartheid movement. He acted as a go-between for Gorbachev and the Reagan administration. He like famously, you know, they overrun Reagan's veto on the economic sanctions because the apartheid was going on. And it was like, you know, he was like a human.
He did a lot of good. I don't think that those things excuse what he did or make it okay. I still don't have an answer of, does this define him? Because I'm now thinking of other criminals and things like...
Well, not other criminals get to go on to be a senator for 50-some-odd sure. years. Also, something that you may be interested in, did you remember Robert Bork?
No.
He was a candidate for the Supreme Court under Reagan, and he was constitutional originalist. I will say, I don't think that gay marriage would be legal if Robert Bork had gotten appointed. And the biggest fighter against Robert Bork was Ted Kennedy. Ted Kennedy was like, he will undo the civil rights law. He will undo civil rights for women, minorities, people in this country. We cannot have him on the Supreme Court. And he made a fucking huge stink about it. And like the thing.
I mean, he was a bleeding heart liberal.
Huge liberal. There's no question
about it. He did a lot of good for things I am very passionate about. So, again, I'm going to have a lot of moral things to come to terms
that's
with,
my
like
thing.
You said.
So Lin-Manuel Miranda, the guy who wrote Hamilton, talks yes. about that in life, because even Aaron Burr, you know, shot Alexander Hamilton sure. or whatever, he has, like, a why. He has, like, an underlying, not necessarily redeeming quality, but, like, an underlying why. And Lin-Manuel Miranda has, like, some quote, I can't remember it, but it's something like, I don't believe in mustache-twirling villains. Like, there aren't. Are there these people that are just wrongdoers just for the sake of wrong or self-interested or selfish
people? What
about
serial killers?
That's a great question. I don't know.
Because that's what I'm thinking about.
Is that even a person or is that a monster? I don't know.
Well, and
are there people that you can't reach ever
because
their brain is broken?
Mental health, yeah.
Their brain's broken. I mean, not to say that in a mean way, but like they literally can't feel.
Mm-hmm.
And is this
psychopath,
guy?
Psychopath, sociopath.
Yeah, and I don't think Ted Kennedy is
that. I don't either. And that's when you think about, like, does this define him? He, when he was alive, I guarantee you not a day went by that this did not plague him.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So when you're alone by yourself and at night trying to go to sleep and this is all you can think about.
Oh, I bet he
had,
like, nightmares.
Maybe there is something to the judge saying no sentence I can impose will be nearly as harmful as what he's going to go through.
A lifelong. He also super opposed Clarence Thomas, and he grilled Clarence Thomas and was like, will you overturn Roe v. Wade? This is, women have a fundamental right to, you know, their own body.
Be curious to know what he would be doing now if he was alive in our current political climate.
Probably, you know, the same. I mean, he was the lion of the Senate. I mean, he was the liberal lion of the Senate.
He did not back down. He let everyone know how he felt. That's why it's almost disappointing and surprising that he did react
the
way he did.
Can we just say, though, he named his dog Splash?
Yikes! Oopsie.
Maybe he didn't think about it ever again.
Oopsie daisy. Or he's just so dim that didn't even occur to him. Might be a little bit of an oopsie daisy. Well, what do you think? Do you think it defines him?
I just don't think. I mean, I think he's not a psychopath. He was a person that his... You know, fortunately for all of us, his one bad act, the redemption that he sought his whole entire life, had a huge positive impact on the rest of us.
Sure. So it's like, do you sacrifice one for the greater good type of thing?
Oh.
I'm not saying that's what he did. We should say her life was sacrificed
for
the greater
good. No, but like morally,
but
do you think he was like trying to prove, or even like JFK and RFK, they said, you know, his whole life, he was like, I want to just do what my brothers did. Like, I want to like fulfill their legacy.
But would he have done those things had she still lived? Do you think that her death is what kind of prompted him to do all of these things?
It did sort of wake him up. It shook the shit out of him and was like, you're an adult now. You're in charge of the family now. Get your shit together.
So again, we go back to kind of the butterfly effect. If this hadn't happened, would all of those other things have happened?
Yeah. And if you think, well, he should have gone to jail. He should have been, you know, put in prison for 30 years. Would Robert Bork be on the Supreme Court and then gay marriage would be illegal? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. That,
tell me.
I mean, the only thing I do know is I bet the Kopechnys would sacrifice all of that to have their daughter
absolutely
back.
I mean, then that's the mother and father's love.
Yes, definitely.
Man, it was a heavy subject today.
Yeah, but I love good though. It's making me really think. I'm telling you, I'm gonna be up tonight trying to plan Ella's first birthday, all on Pinterest, but in the back of my head, like, does this define him as a person?
Jovember F. Kennedy will do it for you.
I like it. Well, do we have any shout outs?
Just everybody that listens all the time.
Okay, and specifically. Lucy.
Yeah, the goose.
Hi, Luce. Lucy's been helping in this episode.
She's been very good.
She has been.
Well, the best thing you guys can do to help us grow is to like, review, subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. Also, if you see any contests, you should nominate us for it. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows what's out in the world?
Yeah, we found out about a contest today that we would have loved to have been nominated for. It's already passed.
Next year.
We did not win. But next year,
also tell
we're
going to
be nominated.
Yeah, definitely share this with a friend. Especially, I've seen a lot of posts on Facebook that are like, I finished listening to a podcast. What should I start now? Hey, mm-hmm. How about this? Also, if you just tell your friends, it just means that you like us enough to say something. That's really cool.
Yes, we get very excited and we'll screenshot stuff and send it to each other when people on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter like
message us,
suggest us to a friend,
like,
or
us.
Something. Yeah, it makes us feel very special.
Speaking of Instagram and Twitter, you can follow us at Sinisterhood Pod and like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Christy, where can the fine folks find you?
On social media.
On social media.
They can find me on Instagram at Christy M. Wallace and on Twitter at Christy or GTFO.
I'm on Instagram at Heather versus the world or at Instagram at MC or on Twitter at MCK versus the world.
Can we also plug Lucy's?
She doesn't have one.
I thought Lucy and Goose had an Instagram.
You can follow
Lucy and Buffy.
You can hashtag Buffy and the Goose. And it's like every picture I post of them is all that hashtag.
Okay. There's so if you want to see all of Heather's great pictures
you
of
can
her
follow,
dogs.
You can follow the hashtag Buffy and the Goose all together.
And they are very cute.
They're super cute.
Yes. Well, as always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Sinisterhood.